Colin O'Brady is a man who lives life pushing the edges of what is possible. He crossed Antarctica all by himself, pulling a sled full of food. He's always doing things to test his capabilities. And one of the great things that he's accomplished is simply recovering when everybody said he couldn't recover. So we tell stories of the comeback, we tell stories of pushing our limits, we tell stories from the different adventures we both had around the world. This is an inspiring podcast with a wild adventurer and record breaker, Colin O'Brady. But before we get started, a word from our sponsors. First up, we have Helix. And the reason why I'm continuing to have Helix as an advertiser on the podcast is because I'm continuing to sleep on Helix mattresses. Oftentimes, wherever I go, if I'm going to stay in there for long enough, I'll send a Helix mattress over there because I really approve and appreciate the sleep that I get on a Helix mattress, the many choices that they offer, and also the way that when you pull that mattress out of all the packaging, it doesn't smell like those toxic mattresses that you could get from those traditional stores, which are soon becoming dinosaurs because there's just a better model. And Helix has that better model. It has a better mattress. So I get homies who talk to me. Maybe they've heard a read on the podcast, or maybe they're just curious because I wrote a book that includes conversations about sleep. And not that I'm an expert on all things sleep personally, but I do understand the field in a great way. And I do understand what a great mattress is and what I like and what my family likes. And so I unequivocally recommend Helix as the mattress, just straight up. It's what I believe the best in class. I think the pricing is super competitive and really reasonable. The way that they create the mattress, the whole thing top to bottom from a company and from a product standpoint are just top of class. So if you're interested in purchasing that next mattress, or you have a guest bedroom or you got that mattress and you're like, man, I'm not going to tell my guests that their mattress there is kind of shit, but whatever, you know, they love me and it's all good. Maybe think about upgrading to a Helix mattress, even for your guest room or wherever else you might be sleeping. So if you're interested, go to helixsleep.com/AMP and you are getting 20% off all mattress orders and two free pillows using the URL helixsleep.com/AMP. And this is the best offer we've ever had. And so with Helix, you're going to have better sleep. I really believe that. And that can start now with this really incredible offer from Helix. So once again, helixsleep.com/AMP for 20% off your mattress orders and two free pillows. So I'm thrilled to share with you guys, I co-founded a new company called Sayu, which makes essential oils. And the reason I wanted to do this is that I've found that the power of essential oils when used in ceremony or in ordinary life is really profound. It's an opportunity to invite you into a different world. So when I'm facilitating medicine or receiving medicine, I reach for these essential oils to allow their scent to transport me into a different world. Now, there are many different botanicals and essential oils that exist in the market, but I wanted to create the very best, the things that I would want to use when I'm in ceremony, the worlds that I would want to enter into. And so we got with the best formulators, the best ingredient suppliers, where everything is sourced in a beautiful way from all the way from the seed to the distillation to the partners where we're acquiring these botanicals, so many of them wild harvested, so many of them that really abide by the principles of a more beautiful world and a more beautiful relationship with the world. So we created six different blends that invite you into six different worlds. The first world, of course, is Arcadia, the name of our festival. It's a scent that brings you this feeling of joy and connection in this unique blend called Arcadia. And then there's Valhalla, the smell of steel and leather, a more masculine scent, and the smell of the earth and wood. And then there's Eros, which is this delicious smell of both vanilla and spice that invites you into a more erotic state. And then there's Elysium, just like the heavenly fields that bring a sense of peace and calm. And then there's Mage, which was actually channeled by one of our partners as a way to use these unique plants that I've never smelled before as a form of spiritual protection and transportation into different worlds. And lastly, there's Helios, which uses the flower Corsican Helichrysum, which is one of the most coveted and beautiful scents in the world. And when I first smelled it, I was like, oh man, this is the smell of sunlight. If sunlight had a smell, this is it. So we called it Helios and blended it with some other botanicals. So everything from the beautiful packaging to the way that these oils are harvested and distilled from these plants, we just did it right every way, all the way up, all the way down. And these are all in my medicine bag wherever I go. And I think you guys are going to love them. So I'm super proud to share our new company, Sayu.Earth, Sayu.Earth. And if you're interested, you can get 15% off with the code Aubrey and invite yourself into these wild, beautiful worlds that I've co-created with my partner, Carly. And the name Sayu is also really rad. I asked Matthias DiStefano, what is the word in Atlantean for earth? And he scribbles on his notepad in Atlantean, so he really knows this language. And if you believe that or not, it's up to you. But he said the name was Sayu, S-A-Y-U. And so we called the company Sayu, S-A-Y-U, because it's a relationship with the beautiful array of flora that exists on our planet. So Sayu.Earth. And once again, if you want 15% off, go to Sayu.Earth and use the code Aubrey. And definitely let me know what you think, because I absolutely fucking love these essential oils. And now an uninterrupted podcast with Colin O'Brady. Colin, what's up, my brother?
What's up, man? It's always great to see you.
Last time I talked, you were busy walking across Antarctica with poopy pants half the way through. So if anybody wants that story about how you shit your pants in a suit that it was too cold for you to take off, please listen to the last podcast.
Yep. Definitely walked across Antarctica, and the poopy pants definitely came into play. You know, when you're that suited up, man, you know, you got to go. What are you going to do? You get frostbite your hands or your butt?
No, you can't do it. I was trying to explain this story because I was excited about doing this podcast, and I was explaining some of the crazy shit you get into, and I was telling that story. And then I forgot exactly how it worked, but I imagine you had like one of those onesie poop hatches that you like unbuckled and just had like a little poop hatch so you could keep your whole suit on.
Well, so normally what would happen is, so I'm at it, for context, I'm in Antarctica. I'm trying to become the first person across Antarctica solo, unsupported, and fully human powered. So that means I'm dragging a 375-pound sled solo across Antarctica, and it was about roughly 1,000 miles. And the reason the sled's so heavy is because unsupported means no resupplies of food or fuel along the way. So you got to bring all your stuff with you. I created these like custom, you know, food bars that are kind of all, you know, geared towards my high performance, but I'm burning 10,000 calories a day and I'm eating 7,000. So I'm on like a 3,000 calorie deficit. I'm a bag of bones skeleton by the end. I've lost like 50 pounds. But like, I tried to get my body on like a regular schedule. So I'd wake up in the morning and because I'm like, when I'm out there pulling my sled, like, it's like, you know, this like this white room that's trying to kill you. It's minus 40 degrees.
Right.
It's brutal. So I get on the regular schedule. So every morning, you know, I wake up, I turn my stove on, I get the day going, and I've got a little vestibule. So basically inside of a tent, you've probably been, you know, there's like the little part that's like where the doorway is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a snowy bottom. And I'd like crawl in there outside of the wind and take care of my business before I got suited up.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually worked pretty well.
So you would take the suit off entirely.
I take the suit off basically and just like hunker down, but I'm still inside of my tent.
Right.
So inside, tent, outside
so
of my tent.
The tent's warm enough that you don't freeze your balls.
So I'm like, that's my one time a day. But once I get going, like it's way more difficult than that. So the night before this, like day 17.
Wait, one time a day. So you're only pissing one time a day?
No, pissing, you can kind of like turn out of the wind, you know, for a second, make it real quick. It's minus 40 outside.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a picture I took of me that I took a cup of boiling water and I threw it into the air and it literally just goes poof and turns into ice. Boiling water into ice in like a vapor in a second.
Uh-huh.
Like it's that's how cold we're talking.
You took a piss, it was like sub-zero laying down a fucking
exactly.
spot. To slide for scorpion.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, get over here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
some Mortal Kombat stuff. No. So basically, yeah. So I get into that rhythm. I'm like, okay, that's my one time a day. And then I got to make to cross, which, you know, I barely did on my last bite of food. You've got, you know, I'm pulling my sled 12 plus hours a day. So here I am. I'm so hungry. Like I'm every day, because I'm 3,000 calorie deficit. Mm-hmm. That's almost like not eating food every single day. If you're like running a 3,000 calorie deficit, like I'm starving.
Did you see any animals?
No animals in the interior of Antarctica.
No animals.
There's literally nothing. On the outside, there's tons.
Because if there was like a penguin or something, and you were that hungry, would you have side-eyed that? Would you have side-eyed that penguin
for
and
sure,
been like,
bro,
God damn.
I've been cooking that thing up on myself.
I haven't had penguin meat before.
So what happens is I've got these daily bag rations. There's like one day every single day, like completely rationed out so I don't like eat the other day's food. And finally, I wake up like in this like nightmare and like day 17, I'm like shaking. I'm so hungry. I go crazy. And I just tear into the next day's rations. Uh-huh. I just start like stuffing my face. Right. I'm just like, I don't care anymore. I'm too hungry. Like, whatever. And that for like, you know, for a minute, I'm like satisfied. Then I'm like, oh shit. First of all, what am I going to do for food tomorrow? I'm screwed. Right. But then what got even worse is I had kind of dialed these bars and they're super high fat bars because I want a high calorie. Great for my body. It worked amazing. But I ate so much all mm-hmm. at once. There's a lot of coconut oil, nuts, seeds, super healthy. Sure. But like it was just too much quantity in one sitting. And so I wake up the next morning, I'm kind of like not feeling great, but like I'm like, all right, do my thing, get my regular, you know, my regular situation on in the tent. Now I'm out there fully suited up. I've got my harness on. I'm zipped up on multiple layers, face mask on. It's so cold that if you expose like your face or hands to the cold for 1 minute, you're getting frostbite. Like you can't really have anything exposed. And then I start feel the stomach just gurgle. I'm just like, that's not great. That's not great. And I'm like, no, I'm fine. But it's like hour two of a 12-hour day until the next time I'm going to be back in my tent set up. Because it takes like an hour to like set up the tent, shovel snow, get inside, the wind, all this. It's not just like set it up real quick and like chill. So man, I'm suited up and it just starts gurgling. And I'm like, maybe I'll just let out a little fart or something. You know, just a little
never
something.
Never trust a coconut oil fart. Bro. No, never trust a coconut oil fart.
So, you know, we're down this path. We might as well continue this, finish the story, which is basically what it sounds like, is that little fart turned into quite an explosion in the pants. And now I'm like, okay, what do I do now? So weight was so crucial. 375-pound sled. I could barely pull it on the first day to move. And that still didn't give me
enough.
And
now you got a one-pound dumper.
I got in there. In my mind, I go, I had like tried to get rid of everything. I was like cutting the tags off my jackets. I was trying to get as like, you know, few of, you know, weight in there as possible. I only brought 10 wet wipes with me for the entire 54 days. And I didn't bring an extra pair of underwear. I was like laughing and crying at the same time. I was like, this is the worst. What do I do? And then I was like, but I kind of have to keep going. So it was like hour 4 or 5 of the day. So I was like, well, give it 20 minutes, going to freeze against my body anyways. And I'll sort it out in the tent like later that night. So I just kept rolling the rest of the day, like 7-8 hours before I finally set up my tent.
Did you get like diaper rash?
I did. It's so dry there. Antarctica is actually the largest desert in the world. People don't really realize that because there's so little precipitation. When it snows, of course, it never, you know, evaporates or melts. Right. And so it's actually really dry there. So usually you get diaper rash from like, you know, kind of a humidity or like swamp ass kind of vibes. You don't get that there. It was just basically like frozen shit on the inside of my legs. And I might have even used 2 or 3 of my 10 wet wipes. It was like a big allocation.
You got to use all of them if you need to.
That's the one emergency moment. Yeah. So anyways, man. Yeah.
You're wild, man. You're always up to doing wild shit. That's just kind of your thing.
I enjoy it. You know, I love, you know, setting big goals through the lens of, you know, I grew up as an athlete. So I, you know, moving my body, being physically active has always kind of been my modality, I suppose. But it is, you know, more than anything, in access to the spiritual realm. You know, it's that personal journey going deep inward. And so to me, there's sort of the external manifestation of what it is to physically get fit and strong and pull a 375-pound sled and grind, or the other, you know, 10 world records, various other world records I've set in that space. But at the same time, casual. It's also
10 world records. It's casual. You know, and, you know, as you say that though, you know, one thing that I really believe is that, you know, I know God is real, and God is found anywhere you encounter the real, right? Like God lives in the real. God is real and lives in the real. Mm. And so whatever method you use to encounter the real, if you're paying attention, you'll find God there.
That I mean, I have goosebumps. I'll share a story with you that I think that you'll appreciate from that context. So I, in contention for talking about Antarctica, I know we'll talk about all sorts of other stuff, but when I'm crossing Antarctica, so I'm alone for 54 days. I deleted all my music, all my podcasts, so that I could really be in full silence the entire time. And you've got, you know, 54 days, and then it's endless white. There's no mountains on the interior. There's no landmarks. It's just white on white on white, and the sun doesn't set ever. It's directly overhead. So imagine being in this white box, essentially, with nothing to see for 24 hours a day and no external input.
It's like the opposite of a darkness retreat.
Exactly.
It's like a lightness retreat.
It is. I haven't gone to that darkness retreat earlier this year. I'm sure we'll chat about that. But it really was. It was like just being in this sensory deprivation tank, except for I joke around. I have a deep, you know, love and respect for Mother Nature in Antarctica, specifically in my heart. But I'm also like, this white room is trying to kill me every single day. You know?
Uh-huh.
And so the reason I did that, of kind of deleting everything, was that I had this theory that that's going to be difficult for the first many days, but it will also allow me, if I can find it, to tap into the deepest flow inside of my mind that I possibly can, into this timeless, spaceless place. I don't know if you got there in your darkness experience, whatever, where you're like, is an hour a minute, or is a minute an hour, or is 1 hour 10? You know, like when time just starts to bend and warp.
Of course.
And I figured that if I could get into this flow with my mind and body, not that I was trying to skip over time, but that I could just tick off days, just like the same rhythm, the same routine, the right, left of the skis, the rhythm of that motion, kind of a walking meditation of sorts. And multiple times I tapped into some really deep meditative flow, but the story I share comes towards the very end of that experience. So I'm out there. I get to the South Pole on day 40. I'm actually racing this other guy. No one in history has ever completed this crossing. And basically, there's this other guy out there racing. There's a whole other part of it. But I'm ahead of him by a couple days. I'm trying to stay in front of him. And then I get to this place around like day 42 or 43 where the storms just get so bad. My body's so depleted. My ribs are sticking out. My hip bones are sticking out. Few years previous to us attempting this, a guy had actually died attempting this crossing just 100 miles from the finish line. And I'd always been like, how did that happen? Like, he was so close. And I start to realize in this moment, like, oh, it's not the first 40 days out here. It's not the first 50 days out here. It's like the last 100 miles, because your body is so wrecked and so cracked and so depleted.
Yeah.
Like, what's going to happen? So I'm like, man, I'm out of food. Like, basically out of food, you know, just body's cracked. And there's a couple of videos I took in my GoPro myself where I'm just crying. Like, I'm just crying in my GoPro, like, man, I wish I could quit. Like, if there had been an ejector seat button, like, would it be easy to push it to get out of there? But I'm like pretty pot committed at this point. You know, I'm 900 miles into this expedition. Crazy storms, crazy storm after day after day after day. And I wake up, it's Christmas Day, it just happens to be. And the storm's quiet for the first time. And it had been 50, 60 mile per hour headwinds, which makes it minus 70 degrees, just directly in my face every day. And I get up and I start pulling my sled that day on Christmas Day. And as I start pulling my sled, like, those flow states, I'd like touched them before, but all of a sudden, like, my body just completely forgets its weakness. I just warp like down into this like kind of spirit plane of energy, starts kind of bubbling up inside of me. And all of a sudden, like, an hour goes by, 2 hours goes by, and I start feeling like this sense in my body. I'm like, I'm feeling stronger. Like, I'm feeling stronger. And I'd never done this before. You know, I've touched this place in other, you know, modalities, but never sort of pulling my sled like this. And I actually just get this, it's kind of just this telling, a sense. It's like, I don't know, call it God, call it the universe. I had to like, put your arms out. And so I'm standing there on the ice, and I put my arms out, extended right to left. And I close my eyes and I start chanting. I start going, infinite love, infinite love, infinite love, infinite love. And I can feel this resonant energy just going, coursing through like my entire body. And of course, my family had been deeply supporting me, and I this nonprofit where it's all this thousands of school kids around the country have been like sending me love. And I literally felt like they were like out there on the ice with me. Just this love was just shining through the entirety of my body and just charged up. And I actually started kind of pulling my arms in like this to kind of just like even charge up the energy more. I was just like, infinite love, and like pulling it out. And I felt the strongest that I felt the entire time. And then I started playing with the energy, and I started like feeling all this love and camaraderie and respect for even the guy who I was racing, even though it was a crazy hard battle. I was just like, I'm sending you love. And I started like pushing my arms out like this, like infinite love. And it's like sending the energy like back out to my family, to Captain Lou, who I was racing, to school kids, to anyone out there loving and supporting me from afar. And what ended up happening in this moment is I was like, man, I get it now. Like I touched God, you know, I was in that deep energetic connection, you know, God, spirit, universe, whatever you want to call it. And I realized that the food I had been eating, the thing I needed to think I could fuel my body, like that was nothing compared to this. Like this was rocket fuel. This was like jet fuel.
Yeah.
And so I looked down at my sled and I was like, or I looked down at my GPS and I was like, how far am I away from the finish? I looked down 77 miles. It was the closest anyone ever been to completing this crossing of Antarctica. My average mileage per day at this point had been maybe 15, 20 miles at best. Like my sled was lighter, a lot lighter when I started because I'd eaten all my food, but I was like, my body was cracked. You know, I was falling apart physically. And I was like, 77 miles. Okay, like what is that? Like that's like maybe 40 or 50 hours, maybe 4 or 5 like big days. But in this kind of mantra of infinite love and the way my body was feeling in this sort of connected spiritual space, I was like, 77 miles? Like, what is that? That's just a number. What is this time? 40 hours. Like, what is that? And I thought to myself, I was like, if I'm burning this rocket fuel, why would I even stop? Mm-hmm. And so I literally just committed myself. I'm not going to set up my tent again. 10 hours goes by, 15 hours goes by, 20 hours goes by, and I'm just locked in it. And every single time that I'm feeling a little bit like as the energy is going back, I just reach my arms back. I'm not even like eating the food anymore. I just put my arms back and start going, infinite love, and I can feel this charge full of energy. Ultimately, 30 hours goes by, 32 hours goes by, and in the distance, in the far distance, you can see super far in Antarctica when it's clear, and I see this post in the very, very far distance. It's white everywhere, and I see this post, and I know that the USGS have pounded in a post at the edge of Antarctica, marking the edge of Antarctica and the beginning of the frozen ice shelves. And I realize in that moment that I'm about to complete this crossing, this world first crossing. And I just sat there just with like deep reverence and gratitude for what you said, like, you know, connecting this mind, body, soul, spirit, like this was the purpose of this journey, not the external, I did this or plant the flag, I'm the first or this, like this moment, this space was what it was. And interestingly enough, as I'd been fighting so hard the last 54 days to get to the end, to get to the finish, to get there, whatever, I saw the post in the distance, the actual finish line where I could touch and be done. And I wanted to stay. Right? Mm-hmm. Like I didn't want to actually complete the journey. I just wanted to sit in the reverence of this moment. Eventually sitting there for long enough, of course, my body got cold and needed to keep moving to get to the end. So I stood up and took those last few steps, touched the post, and just this deep reverence to the infinite that I touched out there. And it was
bro.
Incredible.
Yeah, it's beautiful, man. When I talked to, I talked to my brother Porangi, who is a sun dancer, and I do, you know, a fairly regular sweat lodge practice whenever I have somebody, a Chinupa carrier who can pour a lodge for me and my family. And it's really hard for me to make it through one of those 3.5 hour lodges without having some water at some point. It's like really hard. I have to like, it's so brutal. But the way that the Sundance works is you do a lodge in the morning, a lodge at night for 4 days. And you have no food, no water. So like 8 lodges, no food, no water. At some point, if you're a piercer, you'll pierce yourself, hook yourself up to a tree, and you'll dance in ecstatically until you pull the plugs out of your body and you offer your blood as a prayer and an offering. And of course, the question is like, how do you do it? How do you do it? And Porangi goes, well, it's impossible. Except for prayer, you know? And so in doing something that difficult, the only way to make it through is to be, you know, like you were, like a God-itarian, you know, it's like a prayer-itarian, like where actually you're sourcing this energy that you would normally get from water, you would normally get from food, you would normally get from rest because of the realness of what you're doing. You source it from source. And
absolutely.
That's like, so there's something like infinitely spiritual. And you'll even see this in, you know, in a lot of like high level combat operatives too. You know, there's like a deep faith in God, even if they've seen the most horrific things that would you would imagine would question their belief. But there's some spiritual component if you actually like look in, because they've touched something that's really real. And I think all of the people who don't have that kind of spiritual basis, they're living on their phones, or they're living in their minds, they're living in these alternate realities instead of going out there and like really, really feeling it.
Totally. I mean, in that moment, I, you know, touching that post, it was, you know, sure, like I said, the finishing of this achievement, but really this really deeply connected space was so special and so interesting. And, you know, certainly one of the peak moments of my life. And as I was standing there, I kind of came up with this sort of like rubric in my mind. This might sound silly, but this is where my mind went, like the logical brain. And I started to think about life's experiences on a kind of a spectrum of 1 to 10. Like 1 would be like what would we consider like heartbreak, hardship, challenge, you know, death of a family member, you know, heartbreak, you know, whatever that looks like, a 1, right? Or shitting your pants in the middle of Antarctica on day 17, right?
That's probably like a 4.
I'm kidding. Totally joking. And then our 10 being our connected moments, right? Our high highs, like our peak arcs, yeah, of life. In the spiritual plane, or, you know, dancing ecstatically at Burning Man at sunrise, right? Just like you're, mm-hmm, just in it. You're just like, this is right where I want to be, right in this moment, just like pure bliss. And what I realized in that moment is that I feel like that our ones and our tens, they're connected.
Yeah,
you don't
bro.
Get to that
it's
10.
It's like a circle.
Totally. You don't get to that 10 in spite of your ones by hedging against them. You actually get them embracing it. Like, I'm in that connected space, or the sun dancer in this, in your example, mm-hmm, which is a beautiful example. Like, they're in it, man. They're, like you said, they're hooked in. They're, you know, they're haven't had water, food, all the things. Like, they're in it. And then that releases the 10.
Yeah.
And to your point about people just being on their phones and what is like, you know, I think we all know this, but I think most people spend their entire life in what I call the zone of comfortable complacency between 4 and 6, man. They just wake up. It's just like, go to a job. Don't love it. Don't hate it. Like whatever. It's just 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, like 365 fives just, yep, stacked against each other. You start asking someone like that, you're like, hey man, like, what'd you do last Tuesday? What'd you do a month ago? What'd you do 6 months ago? And people are just like, it's crazy, man. Like, people are like, I have no idea, because life just ends up on this autopilot of their comfortability. Mm-hmm. And I've thought a lot about that. I'm like, well, why is that? Like, you know, why is that? And I think that our brains at some level are hardwired to hedge against the 1, 2s, and 3s. Like, I don't want those things. I don't want the discomfort. I don't want the pain, whatever. Sure. But if you take the 1s and 2s off the table, guess what? You take the 9s and the 10s off the table as well, and you end up in this range-bound space. And so your example of, you know, the combat veterans, obviously those guys don't want to be there necessarily, you know, shooting the bad guys, but they're in it, right? They're connected. They're purpose-driven, and they're experiencing the full tapestry of life. So for me and all of my expeditions after learning this lesson, you know, that Antarctica expedition was 5 years ago, of what that fuel is, not just that infinite love, that source energy, but also those moments of despair, those hardships. And when I feel that 1 or that 2 in my life, not just in an expedition, but in more real ways within my heart, you know, that deep sadness, I've learned to smile at it. Mm-hmm. I've learned to smile. Like, I feel that 1 or that 2. And of course it's hard, and I can, you know, find myself tensing up, but then I can also feel myself smile and go, I'm experiencing a 1 or a 2 right now. Yes. I've opened up the doorway to let my pendulum swing of my peak arc all the way from the 1s, all the way to the 10s, and get that juice of life on either end of that spectrum.
Yeah. It's interesting too, because it does tend to go the other way, right? So if you look at the hermetic principles, one of the hermetic principles, there's 7 principles, but one of them is the principle of rhythm. And it basically talks about everything being like a sine wave. Mm-hmm. And this is how we go. Now, hopefully the sine wave is arcing upward in a spiral, right? But it's still a sine wave. So when you get those 9s or 10s, also there's likely going to be a 1 or a 2, yeah, that's going to be coming the other way. This is just the nature,
right,
of, it's a law of the cosmos to a certain degree. They advise that a master learns to polarize themselves in an identity space that's beyond the place that would feel the 1 or 2. So you almost intentionally bypass where you could be located for that one or two by just tapping yourself into the greater field, into your infinite undying soul, and rather than your personality construct, which would normally receive the blow. So that's what a master does to actually even this out. And that was their guidance. But I've seen this, you know, seen this work in both directions. And I think a lot of people, because of that, they're afraid of going for the nines or tens as well.
Right.
Like the fear of actually reaching, going for your win, stretching for that nine or 10, because they're afraid of the disappointment.
Get knocked off
if
that
they
pedestal.
Get knocked off.
Yeah,
so,
totally.
So they're like, I'll just fucking, I'm going to hold at six.
Yeah.
You know, it's like having 12 on the blackjack table
totally.
And you're like, nope, stay.
Yeah, good.
You know, like, stay.
Yeah.
And I get it. You know, you could bust.
They don't want to bust, exactly.
You know, but fundamentally, you know, dealers showing an eight.
Yeah.
You know, like, you got to hit.
Yeah.
You got to take your chances.
Totally. Totally. Yeah, no, and it's like, I think that it's important to say that again from that upper range bound as well. You know, we are as humans, I think, wired against fear of failure, like that downside risk. But man, we are afraid of success too. You know,
no
fear
shit.
Of success. Of
really I know, stepping, it's real.
Of really stepping into your, you know, full power. Like, what does that really mean? Oh, because then that tells you like, oh, wow, I wasn't really at my fullest potential. I wasn't in my fullest power. And it's easy to just kind of leave yourself short of that because, like you said, you get to those peak arcs and inevitably there is that sine wave that brings you back down.
Yeah. What was your last 10?
Oh, boy. That's a great question. I had a child this year. Became a father.
That's fucking cool.
Yeah.
Congrats.
Yeah. Natural birth. First, person to ever see his face as he.
Wait, how'd you get all the vaccines in him if you weren't in the hospital?
Good point. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Hold on. Let me get my time machine and go back and
poke
him a bunch of times.
For sure. He could immediately get hepatitis. Like, yeah,
for sure.
He's
like
a little crackhead drug dealer.
Fully.
Heroin addict, baby, for sure.
But yeah, gosh, I suppose it's graphic, but it's the way we all came into the world one way or the other. But to just see his head crown and then his head, you know, pop out in the world before his whole body was even out was just a moment that took my breath away, man, that I'll just be.
I bet.
Babies, they're blue.
Were you nervous? Because, like, that's kind of got to be a 10.
Yeah.
Were you nervous?
Oh, yeah, nervous.
Were
like, what, nervous? What if it's not a 10?
What if you're like, yeah, that was whatever.
Just chill. chill. It's funny. Yeah, when you have the expectation of that, that's a good thing to think about. It's funny. I think that the biology of that
it's just going to work.
It's just something.
It's
like,
just going to work.
What I mean? There's all things in life that, there's plenty of times in life, I suppose, where I've had the expectation, this is going to be amazing, and it just doesn't quite hit.
Yeah, for sure.
But at least in my experience, childbirth didn't go
that's
that
right.
way.
Childbirth in fact, delivered.
In fact, it, I would say, over index, and just to witness the feminine power and the strength in that moment, and to just
some,
be that, in,
talk about some real shit,
just being real reverence. It's funny, man. Speaking about the, you know, kind of we're talking about the pain or the difficulty. I've had conversations, you know, with women who say to me, they're like, man, I can't believe what you do. Like, pull a sled across here. That's crazy, man. They're like, I couldn't even run a 5K. I couldn't even, you know, like they say all the things. They say, I can't do this. I could never, it's hard for me to just get, you know, whatever. I can't do this. I can't do that. I can't do that. And I look at them and say, didn't you just tell me you have 4 children? Mm-hmm. You know, like,
right.
Didn't you just tell me, like, forget how hard it is to raise them and the day-to-day, you know, grind and love that takes. I was like, you birthed 4 children. Like,
yeah.
I am bowing down to your feminine strength and power and the fact you can do that. Sure, I can maybe go drag a sled across this, but I'm telling you, what you can do with your body is 100x, 1,000x more badass than anything that I can do. And to witness that and to be in the delivery space was incredible to really anchor that home.
That's awesome, bro.
Yeah.
What was your last one?
That's a good question. Last one. Trying to sit with that for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Not something I've spoken publicly about in this season, but I don't feel called to share it here. I've had some hardship with my mother recently.
Mm.
My mother has been the most incredible mother, like just so there for me throughout my entire life. Yeah. She's quite literally saved my life a couple times. And that's not an exaggeration, like actually been there in some life or death moments for me and like held me. She's awesome. Like she's just like a badass, strong, confident. She had me in her early 20s. So had me young, but built an entire life for us. And it was really special. And we've had some rupture in the last couple of months. That's been difficult.
Yeah.
That's been difficult. Hard to even put my finger on the exact what it is, the story of that.
Sure.
But it's a transitional moment. You know, me becoming a father, her dynamic with my other siblings and their kids. She visited me a couple months ago in Jackson Hole where my son is visiting, seeing the baby. It's her second time out there. And I've had very little conflict throughout our life, my mom and I.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up down this conversation, this path where the tone got elevated. There were some words shared that were hurtful on both sides. And we haven't talked in a couple months since then. Never before has that happened in my life. So I know there's the love is there. The love is in my heart and the love is in her heart. And I know that there'll be repair, but that, that's the most recent one and something I'm still in the process of for sure.
Thanks for sharing, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel that.
Yeah.
Yeah, those relationships where you love so deeply. I think that's another reason why people fear loving that deeply. You know, it's easier to take the edge off. Love at a 5, love at a 6. Mm-hmm. You love at a 6, you lose it.
So what? A 4, yeah.
Yeah, you lose a 4, exactly. Mm-hmm. And you love at a 10, though. You know, when it's when you lose, it goes to 1.
Mm-hmm.
And if I really look, you know, I've been through some challenging things, nothing crazy, you know, car accident that ripped my nose off my face and, you know, different things like that. But those are like, I don't know, 4. I mean, I remember when that happened, you know, like crazy accident, you know, some people may know the story, but I'm leaving my house middle of the day, 2018. 2018 was a brutal year. Just blank out of consciousness. You know, I've been, I've trained boxing and MMA and kickboxing and been in all kinds of contact sports and different sports and gotten concussions, never blinked out of consciousness once, partied my balls off, never blinked out of consciousness. Yeah. Dead sober, Spindrift, sparkling water in the, no, it didn't party the day before, nothing. Middle of the day, blank out of consciousness, accelerate into a guardrail. Guardrail cuts through the brakes, which is a guardrail malfunction, cuts through the side of my car, nicks my neck. Here you can see the star. Yeah. So I have a big scar here, pulls my nose like off my face. So like jaws of life, the whole deal. But I remember like, you know, within 4 hours, you know, I'm hooked up to the heart rate monitors. I'm in the hospital and my, you know, partner Whitney at the time, she was there with me and, you know, like I'm trying to fool around with her in the hospital bed, you know, and my heart rate monitor starts going off. So we keep getting interrupted because the nurse would come in.
Calm down.
Everything's good here. Nothing to see here, doctor. Everything's good. You know, so those moments, you know, are not the hard moments. The hard moments are the when I love at a 10.
Mm.
And when I love at a 10 and then something ruptures, then those are the ones. Yeah. You know, and that could be like a really close friend. That could be, you know, I haven't had it with, I did have it with, you know, with my father when, you know, he went into his, you know, dark night in the woods that he never came out of. And relationships,
yeah,
you know, and it's funny, like you'll be at a 10 in a relationship or a relationship construct, you know, and you'll be like, I did it. Hallelujah. We're at 10. We found the promised land. We found the promised land. We are in Eden, baby.
Yeah.
And I was like, last time that happened was not too long ago. And I was like, I'm going to get a tattoo to commemorate Eden.
And this, I'm here.
I'm here. And we're staying here, baby.
Yeah.
And then, you know, fast forward a couple weeks later and everything falls apart and it's one.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But that's to be able to like continue to ante up for 10. Like that's the way of the warrior poet. It's just like, you know what? Like I'm willing to take the ones because I'm not alive if I don't go for the tens.
Yeah.
And I don't live the tens. So even though I'm dropping all 9 points all the way to the bottom.
Yeah.
Fuck it. It's worth it. So, you know, maybe a little humility about getting it tattooed on me like it's gonna stay forever. But yeah, you know, I'm gonna ante up again for that next 10 and not settle for anything less.
That's so true. I mean, and I think you're spot on about relationships, you know, the real true matters of the heart, right? Those tragedies, like the car accident, or I was severely burned in a fire and spent a few months in Thailand being told I would never walk again normally back in 2008. Silly enough, jumping a flaming jump rope, lit myself on fire. But, you know, those moments teach you stuff. You learn from them. You can grow from them for sure. But there's a deeper cut. When it comes to relationships.
So you were just like on a beach somewhere and they're doing those fire jump roping tricks. And you're like, I'm going to get in here and fucking do this.
Essentially, I'm 22 years old at the time. It's just out of college.
I get it.
And I look over at that and dude's just lit this rope on with kerosene. It's like flying around. People are, you know, about to jump on, or he was like, we jump if you want. I was like, I think I could do this.
Of course.
Obviously, funny enough to your story about driving. Partying my ass off all around the world that trip. I just graduated from college. I was traveling like, you know, around the world on a shoestring budget. I had no money, you know, but staying in youth hostels and getting drunk at night and, you know, having fun, whatever. But that night, I'm dead sober because I'm doing my scuba dive instruction on this island off the coast of Thailand. And so I'm like, I'm sober. I'm focused on the scuba dive instruction, whatever. And of all the nights, and I'm not blackout. I'm not doing that. I'm like sharp and sober. I look over and I was like, that looks great. Yeah. No fully formed prefrontal cortex,
I
suppose.
You'd have had that mushroom shake. You would have been fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Fine,
that would have made the difference.
You'd have been fine. You'd have been ducking that. You'd have been fucking Neo in the Matrix.
Totally.
Just so, like, whoa.
That was the mistake I made, obviously.
Clearly.
Clearly. I didn't have the psychedelic mushrooms. I didn't have the alcohol, nothing in me. And yeah, tripped on the rope. And they had just lit the rope. So there was excess kerosene that hadn't burned off yet. So it trips around me. And then it splattered. The excess kerosene splatters me to my neck. And then that ignites my entire body and all my clothes up to my neck. And thankfully, the ocean was 15 steps away or whatever. So I get up in a ball of flames and literally run to the ocean and dive in the ocean to extinguish the flames, which lets me off alive. But I get out of the water. I've got no skin on the lower half of my body, salt water from the ocean. And I look down and I'm just like, oh, no. My body immediately goes into shock and I start yelling for help. And this guy comes down there, like, he's like, you know, broken English, but basically like, there's no hospital on this island, but I can take you to this place. And so I get on the back of this guy's moped. I wrap my burnt legs with no skin on them around his waist. And we drive down one lane little dirt path. And he's like, we're here. And I'm like, we're here. I'm in shock. I'm like, we're here. And it's like this tiny little shack, little house that's like kind of halfway fallen down. And he's like, this is basically all we got. And I walk in. There's a one room nursing station with like some basic medical supplies. And one of the things about burns is that the infection is it's really painful, but the skin is your largest organ on your body. So you have no skin that's protecting you from all the stuff on the outside in a pretty unsanitary place. Like it can be really bad. That's why people die from burn accidents. And I didn't know that at the time, thankfully, actually. But I end up on this rural hospital in Thailand, that one and one tiny other small one, undergoing 8 surgeries to scrub the wounds. And there's literally a cat running around my bed and across my chest, like in this makeshift, you know, ICU on the other side of the planet. Cause like, that's just like, they're doing their best. It's not no criticism of them at all. They were there for me, but like,
oh, bro, you got the toxoplasma for sure. Yeah. You got, no wonder you're doing all this crazy shit. Now it all makes sense. You for sure have the toxoplasma that makes you more risk taking and more promiscuous. You must be a promiscuous motherfucker. I figured this out. You had this baby, but you're horny and very adventurous from this fucking cat.
The cat got in there. It changed everything.
Like, and for those people who don't realize, Joe Rogan's talked about this a lot. There's this parasite called Toxoplasma A that you get from cats. And it's this thing that actually makes mice attracted to the scent of cat urine, right? So it's actually adaptive for the cat, because if they can spread this to the mice will be attracted to their urine and they'll just get to fucking feed. Hmm. But when it gets in a human, it makes you crazy adventurous, risk-taking, and also hella promiscuous.
All right. Put it right straight.
No, you
right
already
in
got it, bro.
Yeah, I got it there.
It's in there.
It's in there forever. Yeah, it's in there for life. Yeah, you don't have to re-up. Sure. Just there.
For sure.
It's just there.
It's got residency.
Yeah. Since we were talking about my mom, the sort of complete on that story, actually, I wasn't necessarily going to bring this up, but in the context we were talking about before and in honoring her, is I'm there for like 4 or 5 days and, you know, I'm in this hospital. I'm disoriented. I'm on the other side of the world. I'm a young kid. Like, I just ruined my life. I've been a collegiate swimmer, like very much like in my body is kind of how my orientation mm-hmm. has always been. And doctor walks in day 4, day 5, and he looks at me and he goes, "Hey man, like, I hate to tell you this, but I got some bad news for you. You damaged your ligaments and your knees and your ankles so bad, like, you're probably never going to walk normally again. They just didn't think I'd regain full mobility at all." And to your point, there's the like physical trauma, like you said about the car accident, but there's something about whether it's relationships or actually what your brain can do on the emotional level, right? Was like, I thought I was at a one when I was just burned in the salt water in my legs.
Sure.
But it turns out that it wasn't until he grabbed at my full identity, my ego of calling the able-bodied athlete, this is who right. you are, that's actually gone forever, that I thought I just went into this darkest, darkest place of my young life at this moment. And day 4, day 5, my mom shows up in my hospital room in the, you know, tiny little island in Thailand. And I can feel into this a little bit now that I'm a father, still very new fatherhood at this point. But she tells me now, afterwards, she was in the hallways crying, pleading with the doctors, so afraid, asking him, like, please do something, help my son, like whatever. But every time she walked into my hospital room, she came in with this huge smile on her face, just all love, mm-hmm. all positivity, all grace. We're good. I love you. I'm proud of you. You know, we're going to get out of here, and just wrap me in this blanket of love and positivity rather than show. I was already so afraid. I was already so wound up in my mind. If she had echoed that back to me, we would have just been this sort of downward spiral together. And in a lot of ways, I think that's what she wanted to do. But she's so strong and so powerful that she just like summoned this mama bear positive energy. And she started getting me to look towards a few. I was like, I screwed up. Life as I know it's over. And she starts going to me like, hey, what do you want to do when you get out of here? And I was like, Mom, wait, get out of here. I mean, I just want, you know, she's like, no. I want you to, like, let's put something concrete in your mind. So she walks me through this visualization exercise. She goes, close your eyes. She kind of like brings me into this visualization. She goes, think about all the things you're passionate about, you know, what your hopes and dreams were before this trip. What did you want to learn from this, whatever? And she goes, now tell me, like, in your best version of yourself, a year from now, 2 years from now, what are you doing? What's it look like? Just paint the picture for me. Let's play. And she sees me kind of crack this smile, my bandage from the waist down in this tiny little hospital room. And she sees me crack the first smile. She's seen me crack in, you know, whoever knows how long. She goes, what'd you see? Tell me, I want to hear, what'd you see? And I was like, oh, silly. And I was like, no, what'd you see? And I go, I saw myself crossing the finish line of a triathlon. And I'd never done that before. I'd been a swimmer, but like never, it's not something I'd like had mm-hmm. reps in. But whatever conjured in my mind was this strong, able-bodied, fit Colin and triathlon for whatever was what was in my mind of a vision of that.
Sure.
And she goes, open your eyes. And I was like, okay. She goes, great. We're training for a triathlon. And I was like, what? And she literally, in that moment, instead of going like, hey, that's great, but the legs, she just goes, doc. And she starts yelling down the hallway, doc, my son's training for a triathlon now. I need you to bring him in some weights. The doctor's like, what? And literally my mom forces the doctor to go wrestle up these 10-pound dumbbells to just start my, literally she's like, we're starting your training now.
Fucking legendary.
And so I'm lying in this bed. There's one like old grainy photograph of this. It's like pre-digital cameras, like a printed on film kind of camera. And I'm lying there, bandaged from the waist down. I have 10-pound dumbbells that I'm doing some sort of like overhead curl with. And there's this Thai doctor in the background, like looking at me with this side-eye glance, like, man, someone just smacked some sense in this stupid American kid. Like it's told him he's never going to walk normally. And my mom did that every single day in the hospital when I 2 months or so, when I finally got released from the hospital, fly back to the United States. I moved me to Bangkok first, a bigger hospital, and then eventually life flighted back to the United States. I was on hadn't taken a step when I got back to Oregon, where I'm from, placed in a wheelchair when I got home, I'm in a wheelchair. And I'm sitting there my first day back home after a couple months, and it's like even more, I'm out of the hospital, but I'm like, I'm home in a wheelchair, what's going on? My mom wakes up that morning, she goes, all right, we're still on that triathlon goal. She grabs this wooden chair from our kitchen table and she places it one step in front of my wheelchair. She goes, your entire goal for today is to get out of that wheelchair and take literally one step into this chair in front of you. I don't care how long it takes you. And my legs are still bandaged. They're like the size of my wrists at this point. It takes me 3 hours to take one step. I finally like hobble my way up and like literally slump basically with my arms, slump from my wheelchair to like position my body in this wooden chair. And my mom, and the incredible badass that she is, she smiles, she gives me love and praise. And then the next day, she moves the chair 5 steps away. She goes, here's your goal for today. And she does that day by day by day by day. And I slowly regain the ability to walk and hobble around. We're like celebrating when I can go from like the living room couch to the kitchen table. And fast forward, I moved to Chicago. Eventually, I like want to get out of my parents' basement, get a job. I take a job in commodities trading for my very, very brief stint in that world. An economics degree from Yale. Figured I should put that to use. That part of my life didn't last for too long. But what happened was I go to Chicago. And I sign up for the Chicago Triathlon. And I walk to work every single day to get my legs moving as I'm hobbling. And then I go to a local gym. Sign up for the Chicago Triathlon, and 18 months after being in this hospital, 18 months after being told I'd never walk again normally, with all this love and support and encouragement from my mom day by day by day, I start the Chicago Triathlon. I dive into the water, I swim the mile, I get out, I get on my bike, and I ride my bike 25 miles down Lakeshore Drive, and then I look down at my feet, the feet that had been so badly burned that I couldn't walk on. I put my running shoes on, like, I can do this. You know, I put my running shoes on, and I run 6.2 miles of 10K to finish the Chicago Triathlon. And it was a beautiful moment in that I, you know, kind of had fought back against this negativity of being able to not walk again normally. But there was a massive surprise in store, which is when I crossed the finish line, I actually hadn't just finished the race, but I actually had won the entire Chicago Triathlon, placing first out of nearly 5,000 participants on the day. And even that, though, is secondary to me when I really go back to that moment. And so I think that's why I'm so emotional about this momentary distance with my mother, as you asked for my most recent one is that was a sliding doors moment for me. And as a young man, I don't think I was quite equipped to harvest the lessons from a dumb, silly mistake of burning myself. If I had sat there by myself, my own wallowed in my own misery, we wouldn't be sitting here probably having this conversation right now. I wouldn't have set the world records or done the things I had done. But instead of that, my mom looked at me with that love, with that energy, with that positivity and said, let's dream. Your life's not over. Let's build from this. Let's learn from this. Let's grow from this one or this two or this three, whatever you want to calculate that at. But like, yeah, you made a mistake. Yeah, it's a hardship. But the wisdom of my mother to say, there is a positive outcome here. In fact, people have asked me, if you could go back in a time machine and tell your 22-year-old self, don't jump the rope, would you? And it's a great question in that the pain that I experienced through that, I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. It was horrific, sure. Horrific. That said, if I'm being completely honest, I learned some of life's greatest lessons from that difficulty. And so I don't think I tell my 38-year-old self now doesn't go whisper to my 22-year-old self, don't jump the rope. I let him jump the rope. And I let the mother come in and shine the love and positivity and give me the lesson that I needed as a young man to launch into the world in the way that I have over the past decade and a half or whatever.
Yeah, it's a beautiful story, man. I mean, I think, you know, we spoke about it briefly, but, you know, my brother, you know, one of my best friends on the whole planet, Aaron Rodgers, you know, I was there with him at his first games, home opener for the Jets. And he, you know, fourth play of the game, he ruptures his Achilles. Mm-hmm. He'd never been more excited, never been more fired up, you know, to walk out there and lead his team. You know, it was this heroic kind of epic story in the unfolding. And then the thunderbolt hits and he's in that moment and there's, you know, he's now deep in the rehab process. He's like you with the wheelchair in the chair, you know, doing it his own way, picking up marbles with his toes and moving a bowl of marbles from one bowl to another bowl, just in the deep grind of the rehab and the ups and downs. But in that process, you know, as any, you know, good friend would, you know, just kind of guide him through. It's like, you can't say, the last thing anybody wants to hear in that moment is everything happens for a reason. Right. Because it doesn't feel true, right? In the moment, it never feels true. But if you do enough of the right things and give it a reason, like, I don't know why this fucking happened, but I'm going to give it a reason why it happened. And I'm going to give it such a powerful reason that when I look back, I'll have gratitude for it.
Totally.
And that's a choice. You know, that's a choice. It has to have a vision of the future. You have to move through all of the different waves. You have to have the right support. But by the actions and the choices you take, you can get to the point where there's gratitude. Mm-hmm. But it's not like this is all part of the divine plan and the unfolding. You give it a fucking reason.
Yeah.
And so then, no matter how horrible it is, you would say, like, you know, I wouldn't change a thing. And when you get to that point, that's the redemption.
For sure. And I love the Steve Jobs quote that says you can't connect the dots going forward, but you can always connect them going backwards. You know, it's like, all right, here we are. Keep moving forward from that. And to your point, like in that moment, like the moment Aaron's getting, you know, carted off the field, he's not like, yeah, divine plan.
Yeah,
like you're mad, you're upset, you're heartbroken, you're in it, right? But I like what you said is you give it purpose, right? You build from it. You know, you actually take your energy that you have as a human being, as a spirit, to really continue to push forward. And that creates a tapestry of your full life, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Plus, you got that toxoplasma.
Exactly. Plus, I got that. So, like, I got the horny, promiscuous,
yeah,
you know, adventurous vibes. So, yeah, I got that going for you. Funny. I'll tell you funny Aaron Rodgers, very interesting tangential moment in my life that it may be a good segue is, so I sat at the Starkness Retreat.
The one in Oregon.
Sky Cave. And I'd love to talk to you about your experience. I will chop it about that, but quickly about Aaron Rodgers.
Mine was in Germany.
So I'm in Sky Cave, and I come out. I went to the cave for 7 days. I turn my phone on for the first time. I get dropped off at the Medford Airport, you know, to fly back to where I was going. I turn my phone on, and I've got like hundreds of texts.
Sure.
Like my phone's blowing up. It's just like normally, like my phone's been off for a week, whatever.
Sure.
But there's a consistent stream of texts. It's like Aaron Rodgers, Aaron Rodgers, Aaron Rodgers, Aaron. And I'm like, what? Like, what is happening? And I literally came out of the darkness. People knew I was there. The day that Aaron announced on whatever podcast that he announced it on.
Mine, I think.
No, yours? Or yeah. Whatever, announced that he's going.
Or Pat McAfee. Yeah, we talked
about it. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Going to the Darkness Retreat. And I have reporters from ESPN, Sports Illustrated, whatever, being like, we need a comment on this. You're a professional athlete and you just got done with the darkness. And literally my phone is blowing up there's some articles on ESPN, Sports Illustrated that are quoting me. And it's basically, they're like, I'm coming out of this experience and my phone's getting blown up by the press, like, which is amazing. They're like, what do you think? Do you think Aaron's going to sign the $50 million contract with the Packers? Or do you think he's going to? And I was like, based on your experience in the darkness, I was like, I'm happy to talk about my experience. I have no idea. But it was just the funniest perfect storm of like the day I get out and then the media is like grasping for a quote. And they're like, who was just there? And they find on my Instagram that I'm at Sky Cave, literally the same cave that he sat in. So he went 2 weeks after me, literally exact same cave. But it was just the funniest synchronicity of timing. It's like,
that's wild.
I was like, Aubrey's my boy. I've never met Aaron, got much love for him. I cannot comment on what he might do with his life on the other side of this thing.
Stop being so thirsty, journalist. Jesus.
Like, let the man go. And he'll tell you in a few weeks.
Yeah.
But it was just hilarious to come literally have that the minute or within synchronicity of an hour or two of when I emerged from the darkness.
So, wow. So tell me about the darkness, man.
Well, interestingly enough, I don't know if you remember this, but you and I were hanging out. I remember the date because it ends up being a pretty crazy date, which was you and I were here in Austin and lifting weights at the Onnit Gym on March 8th, 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's about 2 months after I got out of the darkness.
Right. And we're hanging out, we're lifting. And the first thing you and I were joking about that day was, I can't believe Austin just canceled South by Southwest for this silly COVID thing. They're going to lose so much money. So it was like in that liminal space before, like, you know, a few days later was like NBA canceled, Olympics and whatever, the whole world shuts down. And we always know what happened after that. But you and I are like in that moment, like, this, you know, whatever, this is a weird thing happening, but we're just hanging out like normal, of course. And you had told me, I said, what have you been up to, man? And you were like, I just went to this darkness retreat. And I remember you telling me about your, you know, somewhat of your experience from that. And I remember just in my mind, that was just like, I was like, huh, that sounds interesting. I'm definitely kind of like pin that in my thoughts for, you know, a future date. I had, previous to that, I'd sat several 10-day Vipassanas, but the darkness was something that intrigued me. I think from the lens also from, like you said about Antarctica, that was a good observation of like the opposite, like so much light versus so much dark, and, you know, ultimately the curiosity to go inwards. But it took a kind of a few years for that to come to life, and then I eventually went and sat Sky Cave this past February, so I don't know, 6-8 months ago or something like that. And yeah, wow, I have so much to say about it. It was a wild experience. I don't know how it was for you in Germany, but one thing that actually, from the on-ramp to it, that stood out to me was there was no ceremony. Like, there was no, like, in terms of from somebody else, from yourself. It's just self-guided, right? But he was just like this guy, Scott, who runs Sky Cave, incredible human, like such a generous, kind, like soul, but was just like basically like, here's the cave, man. Like, you know, do your thing. Close the door, blow out this candle. You know, like it wasn't like a, you know, and I remember that feeling of like, oh, and I think that actually, I actually love that about it in the end. Like, it was a little bit, just because I've sat in ceremony and other things, I'm kind of like used to sort of like, okay, the container, and let's set this container.
I had a bit more ceremony than that.
Yeah.
I have to say, but yeah.
It was, so for me, it was interesting. Like, it was like, I was like just holding a candle and the door closes to the cave. I'm like, cool, I'm in here. I guess I start now. And I sat with myself and looked at that light and said a few prayers and, you know, kind of entered that space. But thematically, that ended, at least for me, my experience ended up being the perfect on-ramp, in that I blow out the candle and then you're just sitting there in the dark, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I, throughout my time there, did try to, you know, do some more breath work or some more specific, you know, directed meditation and things like that. But it wasn't until I kind of let go of all of that that the darkness really dropped me in, interestingly enough. And the first day or two.
And for those people who don't know about darkness retreat, we're not talking about like a little bit dark. We're talking about absolute black, like absolute black. There is not a pinprick of light. If there is a pinprick of light, because some hinge on something has like some way in which like it's in you, fucking ring a bell or whatever and be like, yo, there's a fucking tiny little bit of light that in my second day dark adapted thing, I see this little green glow coming out of this thing, and they'll come in with their fucking blackout tape and they'll paint, they'll tape that shit up, and it's absolute black.
Oh, it's, I mean, you know, whatever, day five, day six, whatever, the end of a week, I'm, you know, put my hand 1 inch in front of my face, waving it around, and I can't see it. There's no, like, there's no shadow. It is dark and dark on dark on dark. And, you know, sitting with that in those first couple of days, there was something that was familiar to me in terms of that whiteness, but obviously different to be in there, such as stillness, you know, obviously still in your body without any sort of objective also, right? There's no like moving from point A to point B, there's nothing to do, and just sitting in that stillness. And what started, where I started with it, I don't want to say, I'm going to try to put positive or negative on it, but I would say tense. Or maybe anxietous, like for me to just like sit still. How is this going to last? Has it been, you know, go to sleep for a little bit? Have I slept an hour? Have I slept 10 hours? Totally. You know, this disorientation, like with that. As I sat there longer, it was interesting to realize that the sensations on my body, whether that's anxietous, whether that's moments of bliss and joy, love, I just cried tears in there, felt moments of like all the emotions, like it's self-generating. Like there's no way to say like, X is happening to me, so therefore I'm feeling this way. Like you're just running a tape of your own mind.
I know.
Right? Which is can be very scary, particularly if you've never entered that space at all. But then this realization of like, I am fully in control of this experience that's happening inside of me with nothing. There's nothing to... But then for me, it went deeper. It was like, well, am I this voice in my head? Who is... Colin, you know, this sort of feeling of like, what is, am I a voice that's talking to me in my head, or is that actually not me and my pure essence is below, you know, and you start like sort of going to all these different, I know as you're nodding your head, you get it, but it's also kind of hard to put into words that sort of inner dialogue. With all of that, yeah, it was, and then for me.
Did you get visions?
So. I would say yes and no. I'd love to hear about your experience because I know it was, I remember you telling me it was pretty visual. For me, it wasn't visual in that with my, it's crazy, you open your eyes sometimes, right? You're like, should my eyes be open? Should my eyes be closed? It's like the same. It doesn't matter. Yeah. But I found that maybe half the time my eyes were closed, half the time they were open. I don't know. It's just like this
in, but
doesn't matter space. What I was able to start to do was my memory became very rich of my own life. My creativity was really enlivened, as was my actual like memories from childhood. And so I felt like I was having these visceral lucid hallucinations, but like from my own life. So I remember like, for example, I would like go back into my mind of like my first swim race as a kid. I'm 5 years old. But I'm not like, oh, like I could say to you, hey, Aubrey, remember the day you graduated from high school or something like that? And you'd like, you know, something's going to come into your mind, but we're going to keep talking and you're going to get distracted as well. You know, we'll continue on. But there was something about the stillness of my own mind that a memory would pop up. You know, I'm first swim race, I'm 5 years old. But like I'm in this dark room, physical space, but like playing out in front of me, like a full like movie screen script, visceral, like in it. I'm like, I am the little kid. I'm diving into the pool deck. I can see my mom across the way. I can feel the wind on my face. I can see the five other people that are surrounding me cheering. I can like just be in it. And so I started like being able to touch all of these sort of parts. At least for me, it was based in the past, I suppose, at first, like in memory, but in this like fully lived and felt somatic way. Big peak and kind of moments of my life, but then my curiosity got to me. I was like, let me reach for the mundane. And I started going in my mind like, what was I doing on Tuesday, you know, sophomore year of high school, driving to school? And I was like, all of a sudden, like in my sister's car, I can see her like turn the radio station. This is the CD she's putting in the player. She's like this. I can see the other, you know, Toyota Camry pull up beside her. Like it was just like,
it's vivid. Interesting you mention that because I did something similar, but it was going to all of my childhood homes that I thought I didn't really remember.
Yeah.
And I was remembering the fabric of every couch and where the paintings were and what the fireplace looked like and what the kitchen appliances were and like all of these things that I thought, like, I don't fucking remember that.
Right.
Someone asked me like, what fabric was on your couch when you were 3 years old at Laro Drive?
Right.
You know, in Agoura. You know, like, what was the... what was the, you know, what was the lining of the swimming pool look like? You know, like all of this shit, but I was like able to actually access all of those different memories.
It's wild, man. Yeah, it's similar. And like, it's at, you know, we think about, you know, trauma or the body keeps the score, things like that. There's like, oh, it's inside of you. It's all in there kind of idea that I intellectually buy into. But this gave me a deeper sort of knowing or understanding of that. Like in our day-to-day life, it is harder to access the fabric, you know, on the couch. It is. But if you sit quietly in enough stillness and really look inward, it turns out like it's for sure in there. It's all in there.
Mm-hmm.
And we are this stacking of our lived experiences, our dreams, our hopes, all of that. And that the darkness really gave me a deep, deep, deep window into being able to access that, which was beautiful and also made me even more aware of how connected I am to myself and my past, and you know who I am in this temporary moment is a reflection of all of these sort of stacked and lived experiences. The other thing for me, and towards the end, was interesting. I definitely got into some of those deeper flow states and those sort of like timeless states. The one thing, there's a small little bathtub in there, so you can, you know.
Everybody talks about the bathtub.
Yeah,
I had like an RV size shower.
So I remember you told me when you first told me, you were like, yeah, man, I just didn't use toilet paper. I just, you know, when I went to the bathroom, I just get in that shower.
Yeah, whatever. Straight in the shower. How would you ever
know? Otherwise, you're like wiping infinite wipe.
Yeah. Like, what am I going to do? Sniff every fucking wipe? How am I going to know if there's shit on there or not?
Totally.
I just got to get right in the fucking shower.
Totally. But yeah, so the bathtub there, and it was, I mean, relaxing and beautiful, but it was the one thing that could keep time, interestingly enough. And there was a couple of times where I'd fill the bathtub up, be hot water, it came out hot, you know, hot. So you just can barely, you know, when you're getting a hot bath, you can almost like barely get in, you know, just get your body used to this hot temperature. And there was a couple moments I could swear that like, it was like I blinked, and all of a sudden, I'd like come out of this like vision that I was in to some like deep corner of my mind, and I'd be sitting in like a cold bath water.
Wow.
And so just this like time warp of, you know, space time, you know, where am I in this moment? But then also, I think the take home from it, or the deeper lesson, you know, having, you know, sat in a lot of different environments and different spaces, there was to me something about the darkness that was unique, and I think maybe has stuck with me more than many other things, was that I took a little journal in there with me. Obviously didn't write very much and can't really write, but I thought if I have some bigger thought that I want to kind of like scrawl down in some, you know, unlegible script. And so Scott, you know, tells me that I've got, you know, half a day left or something like that, that I'm about, you know, about to be concluded. So to kind of just sit with that, you know, realize that this is coming to an end. And I wrote in my journal, sat myself, well, you know, how do you feel right in this moment? And what I wrote, I've looked back on it many times this year since then, is I wrote, I've touched the most calm and peaceful corners of my mind, body, and soul.
Mm.
I wish I could stay longer.
Wow.
And it's reflective of what I said sitting there looking at that post in Antarctica. Like Antarctica felt like something to get through. And of course you go into a cave and you think, am I going to survive this week? Or, you know, have these thoughts in your head. And then once you get into this place, or at least for me, when I've gotten this place, it's like, oh, I could stay here longer. And I think what has been the most beneficial for me on the other side of that, just in terms of my own personal growth and development, to go, oh, I found that deep meditative place of calm and stillness and peace and love inside of myself with nothing else. Meaning, you know, I didn't have to take medicine to get me there. Yeah. I didn't have to be around my friends and ecstatically dancing. What I'm saying, I want to go ecstatically dancing with my friends. I want to have all this. I don't want to have that. But knowing that that feeling, that essence actually lives inside of me without the external of anything, I guess gives me confidence in the, I feel like I have a really blessed and charmed life, and I have abundance and all the things. But that feeling of like, if it all went away tomorrow, somehow someone snapped your fingers and it just evaporated. Knowing that I'm still left with the stillness and calm that I can conjure up and find internally is powerful. Because to me, it makes it feel like all the other things, like the relationships, the play, the laughter, all of that, the community, the joy is additive. But it's right. Not like the baseline is still Colin O'Brady, whatever that means, human identity walking around is peace, is calm, is an embodiment of love at its base level. And then I can find that. And to me, the darkness really revealed that for me, mm-hmm. which was beautiful.
Yeah, yours sounds a lot more chill than mine. I mean, I found a lot of those same places, but it was intense, man. I mean,
tell me about the visions.
So I don't know if it's because I've been, you know, a psychonaut for 24 years and my DMT receptor sites are well primed from, you know, dozens and dozens of ayahuasca, probably hundreds of DMT related journeys and psilocybin journeys, whatever it is. But it was also a part of the place. Like everybody who went to this place in Germany, you know, in Sachsenwalden, in the Black Forest, and with Bharati, who trained, you know, she apprenticed to be able to hold this medicine by going into deep, dark caves. And I want to talk to you about caves too. But they would go into caves as part of, and she was, you know, part of this particular element of the Hindu faith. And so, you know, we had a big ceremony where she was chanting in Hindu and or I don't know if that's the language, but that those were the chants, ultimately, Sanskrit, I suppose. And but everybody who went there, they like visions were like a major aspect of it. So 3 days in, it looked like the ceiling was dripping in these like polyps of neon green.
Wow.
It just starts dripping. Well, first it started flashing, like flashing in this green, like flashing like there was this green, but it was everywhere. It wasn't coming from one place. It was like the whole field was just pulsing. And then the polyps started and the polyps were just dripping off the ceiling in green. So it started subtle. And then by day like four, you know, I started having like actual visions pop through, like the Buddha came through. Mm-hmm. You know, I was having like a really hard moment and I saw this golden Buddha appear and the Buddha's just looking at me and smiling. And I go, "Why are you smiling?" And Buddha says, "Why aren't you smiling?" And I was like, "Fair enough." And then I see him laughing and I go, "Buddha, why are you laughing?" And he goes, "Why aren't you laughing?" And I just chuckled a bit and just looked at him. And I had Buddha right there in front of me, but there was nothing else to say.
Mm.
There's literally nothing else to say. It was like, oh yeah, I can make the choice to smile. I can make the choice to laugh. And it's kind of crazy thinking back. Like, there it is. I mean, whether that's the real Buddha or the imaginary Buddha in my own mind, doesn't matter. But I have what in all effect is Buddha standing right in front of me. And those are the only questions I could ask and the only answers that he needed to answer.
Hmm.
And that was it. And we just looked at each other. And then he drifts away. Had other powerful visions of my father. You know, I've told a lot of these stories. But eventually the whole field bursts open. And it's not as vivid as an ayahuasca journey, but this is an endogenous DMT trip that I'm in for like 3.5 days.
Yeah.
Learned how to navigate it, get curious, you know, start asking questions, more visions come, star beings, you know, tell me stories and all kinds of crazy shit happens. But that was a major part of that. And then also the deep emotional processes and things that are happening.
Did it feel like, I guess in contrast to an ayahuasca or something like that, did you feel more lucid in your sort of recall of the experience?
Yeah, in a way, because it was so long and protracted and that and so slow, except for occasionally when visions would like burst out of the field and become really poignant. But it was like, it was slow. It was a slow journey.
I've tried to describe that and I don't have the best way to say it, but it's like, instead of getting like shot out of a cannon, you're like slowly walking down this path in the darkness.
Totally.
And so like, you're like, oh, I kind of know how I got here sort of. Like, and I don't know, there was something about that felt like more subtle, but also more lucid. yeah. and afterwards, totally. And the integration of that. I don't know.
I think one of the challenging parts for me, why by day six, there was, I remember like when it was the final day, there was some like, oh, I'm going to miss this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to miss this. But also, I was in a DMT trip for 3 days.
Right. You're like, I'm ready.
So like, by the end, like I was sleeping spent. Maybe 2 hours or whatever because
sure.
the visual field, it was no longer black in there. It was just alive.
Wow.
With all kinds of things, and I'm talking to different souls and like just crazy experiences. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like, I'm like, fuck, man. Like I've had enough.
Let me out of here. I need to digest all this.
Yeah, for sure. Like I got to fucking integrate this. So, you know, there was definitely like a period of breaking and a period of, you know, coming back in, but super grateful for it. And as I hear you tell the story, like, there's a deep part of me that misses her, you mm-hmm. know, that misses the darkness. Mm-hmm. And I blacked out one of my guest bedroom. If you ever stay at my house, you'll get it's cool. completely blacked out. So the idea was that I would, you know, have my own little mini darkness retreats. I still haven't really done it except for more than like, you know, one day.
Mm-hmm.
I love that medicine.
It's powerful.
It's really powerful.
Very powerful.
If I was going to dial in like what I would be called to now, you know, I've done lots of psychonautic adventures since then, but if I was to actually really listen about what my body wants, like darkness, for sure. Like I would, if I had the time and space and availability to kind of dial that in, and maybe I do. You know, you just got to make the choice.
Of course.
You just got to decide. The darkness would be... It would be what called me the most because I'd really just love that to slow the pace down.
Yeah.
You know, just slow everything down and digest everything that's happened in the last few wild years of my life.
Yeah, I can relate, man. It's, you know, I feel blessed with all the opportunities and experiences and, you know, like you and I traveling to Egypt earlier this year all the different things, you know. But at the same time, there's in the midst of all this excitement and growth and chaos and all that, there is that calling back to like that set point, that mm-hmm. stillness of like just being like, okay. Once I think when you get on the other side of the fear of the uncertainty of the darkness, it can be just like this calm, gentle, reflective space. And I agree that the medicine of the darkness is a really powerful one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was funny for me. I don't know. People are probably used to you doing wild stuff, so they probably weren't very worried about you and reasonably so. Like, but despite everything I'd ever done, I'd never seen this journey trigger more fear in people than anything else I've ever done. I talk about my wild iboga journeys and all of these things. Everybody's like, oh, wow, sounds hard, but cool, you know? Everybody's like, I would go insane. I would go crazy. And it's like, what are you afraid of, bro? Are you like afraid of your mind?
I have such a similar experience with that with other people. You know, I do a lot of public speaking, you know, I'm in these corporate rooms speaking, sharing all sorts of mindset tools. And, you know, I really enjoy doing that, meeting different types of folks. And, you know, I'm telling them, I'm dragging a sled across Antarctica, I'm rowing a boat across the most dangerous stretch of ocean in the world, the Drake Passage, climbing up, you know, it's all these like, kind of crazy adventures. And people are like, there's something about that. They're like, that's adventurous. That's interesting. They're still like going like, that's crazy. That's hard, whatever. But I mentioned the darkness and they're like, bro, I could never do that. And I'm like, what about the sled pull across? It's almost like they can get there.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, like not really, but like there's something about the primal fear of the dark that people react to. I have the same thing over and over and over again. People of all the things are just like, but no, but like that caveman, I couldn't go. And I think it is, to your point, I think it is that it's a shame. I wish more people would have the courage to confront it. But like, people are like afraid of their own self.
It's like you're living with a monster
right.
the whole time, of every day of your life, and slightly running away from the monster by like, or keeping a nightlight on to keep the fucking monster away.
So
but you got to fucking face the monster.
Totally. So in this vein, I've like over the last, you know, many years, I've been like, okay, 10 day Vipassana. I would recommend that to anyone. 10 days of silence, meditation, whatever. But everyone's like, I don't have 10 days, or I've never meditated. You know, all the things, I can't do that, right? Or I'm not going to pull a sled across Antarctica.
But they're not afraid. But that's the interesting thing. Vipassana, they're like, yeah, I know. I'm not afraid.
Except afraid. I just don't feel like doing that. Yeah, because I don't feel that sounds like hard work. But I am such a, after being in Antarctica, after being in the darkness, after being in pods, I'm such a fundamental proponent that like as human beings, like I'm an incredibly social guy, but like we need to spend a little bit of time looking inward at ourselves. And so over the course of the last couple of years, with that in mind, having all these conversations with people, I'm like, come on, like I would just say to people, like, spend some time alone, like do this, do that. And it actually spawned this book idea that I wrote a book last year called The 12-Hour Walk, which is really from mm-hmm. this vein.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually not long after you and I were together, that COVID moment, I'm sitting in my house in the Oregon coast, and I'm kind of in a negative. I was supposed to go to Everest. We're an expedition planned. Everything's canceled. I'm sitting around just like everyone else, like, whoa, this is weird. People are overreacting. What's happening? You know, all this mm-hmm. kind of stuff. I'm kind of in this funk. I'm like, man, when was the last time I felt super connected, like kind of back in my own body? And I was like, thinking back to those infinite love moments in Antarctica and just the bliss of just the stillness and the silence and the quiet. And so I say to my wife, I said, hey, I'm going to go for a walk tomorrow all day long. Don't worry about me. I'll come back. And she had been making fun of me. She goes, you haven't changed out of your pajamas in like 4 days. You're like sitting there like doom scrolling Instagram and like whatever. She's like, you're not like at the great version of yourself right now.
Right.
And so I go for this walk. I go for this walk and my phone buzzes in my pocket like 20 minutes in. Like I'm going to text my buddy back. And I'm like, what am I doing? I just put my phone on airplane mode and I end up just walking all day, quiet. And I walk back in the front door around like dinner time. My dog jumps up on my lap. And Jenna says to me, she goes, you're back. And I was like, yeah, I told you I was going to go for this walk. She goes, no, like you're back. Like I can see it in you're back. She could just see the shift that happened to me.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, like I do feel like better than I felt. I was like, great. I didn't think anything of it. But it's COVID, right? I mean, I don't know if you do this, but like you're on Zoom calls for the first time. And I think you and I FaceTimed, like, you know, whatever, just like catching up with people. I'm like, what are you up to? And I was like, started telling people, I was like, I don't know, man, I just went on this walk. It actually felt amazing. And people had all this free time in this moment. So people were like, man, I need to try something like that. And before I know it, friends of friends, my mother-in-law, whatever, people start being like, I'm doing this. No phone, no podcast, no internal. I'm going to go for a walk for 12 hours. Okay, do I have to walk the whole time? No, you don't have to walk the whole time. Take as many breaks as you want. It's just about spending a day by yourself. Before I knew it, I had all the dozens of these data points. People, all different types of people, young professionals, fit, young. My 77-year-old mother-in-law, she did it by walking one time around her block, sitting on her front porch for an hour and then walking another time. She maybe covered a mile. My like ultra marathon buddy covers 50 miles. He's so proud of how far he walked. He's like, I was like, but did you spend the day alone? And they're like, yes, looking back, I realize I never spend more than 30 minutes by myself ever. When you're in a room by yourself with no music on, not looking at your phone, not having your kids, not having the TV on, like people literally live their whole life never, ever, ever spending this time in silence. And so,
when was the last time you went and took a shit without your phone so you could do something while you literally, like I'm in the bathroom and I'm like, damn, forgot my phone.
You're like, I'll be here for three whole minutes by myself. So, I mean, I'm a fundamental believer of this medicine and an easier on-ramp for people. So, I got this idea. I wrote this book last year called The 12-Hour Walk. And really, its essence isn't just there's a book, obviously, and it's about mindset. And it's through these lens of the adventures I've been on and whatnot. But really, it's a call to action. And the call to action can be summed up in, you know, two sentences, which is set aside a day, take 12 hours, walk out your front door, spend 12 hours in silence. And that could be in New York City. It doesn't have to be on some, you know, quiet trail. It's your commitment to being with yourself for those 12 hours. Take as many breaks as you want. And anyways, it's been really fun to share that principle. And now I have an app that supports it, that, you know, tracks your walk, that you don't look at. It's an airplane mode. And hundreds of thousands of people around the world have done this 12-hour walk and reflect back to me like, wow, that's exactly what I needed. I didn't have the time for this big retreat or this big medicine journey, or they're not open to that or whatever that is. But like, people are sending me videos crying, cracked wide open. And it's because of overcoming that fear. Like you said, mm-hmm. like you're like so afraid to spend that time by themselves. And then they do it and they go, oh, I know myself better now. I let go of that fear. I broke free of that conversation that I've been winding myself in about my spouse or how she did this or he did that. And it's just like, you know, these arguments you have in your own mind, but the stillness of 12 hours opens people's mind to it. So, I highly encourage people to check it out, 12hourwalk.com or the book. But also one fun thing I've started doing is doing these global walk days. So you walk completely by yourself. It's alone. It's out your front door. But as in the collective energy of the whole, because I've realized that there is a lot of power in the collective sort of, hey, we're all doing this. So the next one, we're kicking off the New Year's with it on January 6th. That's the first Saturday of the New Year's. Just sometimes I realize it helps people to say, have a date. Not just, you can do this any day, because people go, oh yeah, sure, I'll do that. You know, like, hey, come join us January 6th. This is you alone in a 12-hour walk, but there's a whole community that around it, you know, connect with me, Zoom calls, et cetera, to just get people prepped and ready. And it's free. It's entirely free. This is just a public service out to the world of just saying the more people that could spend even 12 hours by themselves, I believe that there's a ripple effect of positivity that comes from that. And I think it's relatively low hanging fruit. You know, people sometimes say to me, 12 hours, that's so long. Where am I going to get the time? And I say, yo, have you seen Game of Thrones? Yeah, yeah, man. I love Game of Thrones. It's so good, man. I'm like, there are 77 episodes. They're an hour long of Game of Thrones. You watch 77 hours of that, which, by the way, I love Game of Thrones too. Love it.
Time well spent.
But it's time well spent. But you've got the time. Right. You know, you got the time. It's what you said before. It's like, you know, whether you want to prioritize that. And 12 hours is a full day, but it's a half a day. And I've seen people invest this 12 hours in themselves and have a 100x, 1000x return on investment of their time, of productivity, of creativity, of depth with their relationships and love. And it has, you know, proven to be an on-ramp for other people to take other journeys. But it's, like I said, as simple as possible. Put your shoes on, walk out your front door, turn your phone on airplane mode, and tap in. So you can sign up on my website, 12hourwalk.com, if you want to do it any day, but love to have people join for the Global Walk Day. Last Global Walk Day, we had people, I think, in 50 different countries doing it simultaneously, and sending out that energetic resonance to the community.
Beautiful,
of that. So that's one of the fun things that I'm passionate about and up to, because I think more in your message, all the things you've shared, I know you've opened so many people's eyes to different journeys and inward, you know, personal growth, and passionate about, you know, unlocking that for people in different ways, because that's the world I was selfish, man, but that's the world I want to live in, where more people are tapped and tuned in, you know, empathetic to their own needs and the needs of others.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you got your eyes set on, man? What are you looking at? Like, what is, you've done so many wild things and, you know, tested yourself, seen what's inside, you know, what is, as you're looking out at the field, you got to have your eyes on some things that are interesting to you.
Yeah. I think actually by the time this podcast comes out, I will, actually be in Antarctica again.
Going back.
And there's an objective that I have out there, which is a speed record from the coast to the pole. 750 miles solo unsupported, the fastest to traverse that. But that is the external why. But I have been back to Antarctica in a couple different ways on this rowboat and some other things, but not like pulling a sled in 5 years since that infinite love experience. And I've, not the 12-hour walk, but I wrote a previous book called The Impossible First, that was New York Times bestselling memoir. The last chapter is called Infinite Love. And I speak about that moment, and because it was so impactful for me. And I actually think Joe Rogan might have been the first person to say this to me. He's interviewing me after that Antarctica crossing. And he says to me, this is interesting, man. He's like, I've interviewed so many of these like badass athlete, fighter, you know, David Goggins, you know, whatever. So he's had so many amazing interviews, obviously. Mm-hmm. And he's like, there's something thematic about them. They all usually have like this messed up childhood or this chip on their shoulder or this like prove it mentality. And that's what like what's, he goes, I'm having this like kind of weird feeling with you. And he said it with a smile on his face. Joe's hilarious, as you know, he's a great good friend of yours. And he's like, there's something like lighter, softer, might I say loving about this experience that you're describing. And I laughed. I took that as a compliment, or at least an interesting reflection. And what I realized is I started burning that fuel at the end of that journey.
Mm-hmm.
And then I left the ice. And I've brought that fuel into my life over the last 5 years in many different ways, and entrepreneurial successes and business and other adventures and whatever. But there is a deep curiosity for me, not because I'm trying to recreate that, but to see if I can go back to that white room and touch that again and burn that fuel, and perhaps burn that fuel from the beginning and not just touch it at the end. Mm-hmm. And so the external, I've given myself this external goal to essentially create framework for the stakes that is to push my mind and body in a place that's difficult and challenging and requires 100% focus, because the stakes are real. And if you make a mistake, you know, it could be fatal consequences. But the curiosity is to see, I think I know the answer, but to prove to myself, I suppose, that that fuel, that visit from the universe or God, wasn't just this random catching lightning in a bottle in a jar kind of moment, but actually, just like in the darkness, lives inside of me and that I can touch and tap back into intentionally when I want to. And so I'm going to go explore that curiosity in Antarctica soon.
What'll be interesting to talk to you after you're done. Sometimes, like, I could see one way this plays out, and I don't know how it'll play out. You'll be able to determine it. But I could see this play out where you're trying, you're reaching for that infinite right. love. And in the trying to reach the infinite totally. Love, you can't find it.
Totally.
And you get to this moment like, fuck, I lost the sauce. Mm-hmm. And I'm no longer the universe's most favorite child. And
totally.
You get to this fucking dark moment in the white room. And then you let all that go, just let it go and be like, all right, so be it. You know, the infinite love's not there. And at the moment where you completely let it go, it just comes right back in. Who the fuck knows how
totally.
It works? But it's sometimes, you know, what I find is when I reach for certain things mm-hmm. like that, when I really am reaching, I don't always get there. But when I let go and I'm not reaching anymore, then I find that it's always there.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Totally.
So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. And you're probably aware of that. So you might hack the code right from the start.
No, but I think it's astute. And it's the same, like I said, about the darkness, like trying to do the breath work, trying to do the meditation, trying to get into it, whatever. And
right.
that's finally like, okay,
infinite
here
love.
I am.
Infinite love.
It.
Come on.
But yeah, to me, it's like creating the context. And then also, like you said, being at peace with whatever comes up.
Yeah.
You know, of course, there's that small attachment to outcome of that curiosity, but also I try to leave that to more just the curiosity rather than I'm going back there to extract the thing that I want. I think that's, you reach for that and it's infinitely out of grasp.
Yeah.
But it will be seen. I'm open to all possibilities.
Well, I'll be sending you infinite love on your journey, my brother.
I appreciate that, brother.
Yeah, I appreciate our friendship. I appreciate, you know, walking this path together in our own unique ways. And it's great to see you, bro.
Likewise. Always a pleasure, my friend.
Yeah. Much love to everybody who's tuned in. We love you guys. Infinite love to all of you, wherever you are. At the time we're recording this, this is a time where the world needs infinite love more than ever. So hopefully by the time this podcast releases, we're in a better place. We may be in a worse place than we are right now. Maybe that's all subjective, but infinite love to everybody right now and when this podcast releases. Because that's our way through all the mess, is finding that love and just pushing that love in every direction. Mm-hmm. Pushing that love in a way that we no longer tell the difference between perpetrator and victim, good and evil, but just universal, infinite love to all life and all beings.
Yes.
Amen. Much love, everybody. Peace. Thanks for tuning into the show, everyone. Hopefully it inspired you to do a little more. Maybe it's to walk by yourself alone and clear everything out of your mind. Maybe it's to take on a bigger adventure. Maybe it's just to get the shit done that you need to get done. We love you and we'll see you next week.